This is Jordan Seculo. More from the debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the U.S. Air Force Academy about religion in the military.
Live from Washington, D.C.
This is my right.
Jay Seculo Live.
Right given by God.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now.
Live a free life.
Call 1-800-684-3110.
Live in freedom.
That's 1-800-684-3110.
Talking about freedom.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
I will fight.
Hey, welcome to Jay Seculo Live. Today we're bringing you an important debate. It's part two of the debate that started yesterday on the broadcast. If you didn't check that out, go to aclj.org. You can listen to the first part online today. It's a debate my dad did with Michael Weinstein at the Air Force Academy, the U.S. Air Force Academy, on religion at our military schools in the United States of America. It's an important debate. We've talked about it a lot. We've broken it down into five separate shows for you this week. Again, folks, we want you to listen. This is part two of the debate. Let's begin.
As the Supreme Court said, student evangelism, proselytizing, was protected speech in a high school. I would think it would be protected speech in an institution as prestigious as the Air Force Academy. Now, it can't be disruptive of the school environment. In the middle of your civil engineering or aeronautical engineering courses, you don't get to stand up and make a statement about your faith, but it certainly should be something that student to student, student clubs that our cadet clubs that have these particular religious views should have the right to meet on the same terms and conditions as anyone else. And as far as faculty goes, there's another famous case that gets ignored these days. It was a 1969 case, and it came out of a military conflict. The conflict was in Vietnam. And students, when I was in school, when Mikey, we were the same age, so we were in school at the same time, there was a lot of protests going on in school campuses around the country about a war. It was the Vietnam War. And a lot of us protested the war, some of us because it gave us a reason not to be in class, others because they had really sincere convictions on it, but they wore black armbands. That was the 1969 form of protest. And the court said that neither students nor teachers surrender their rights to freedom of speech at the schoolhouse gate. Just 2 years ago, I challenged a provision of the Campaign Finance Act that prohibited students from participating in election campaigns, or even contributing a nickel, for that matter, to a candidate if they were under 18 years and younger, 17 and under. They were not allowed to participate. We challenged that, went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. A lot of talk about this bipartisan campaign. McCain-Feingold was the bill. We were the only successful challenge, and it was because it was simple. You can't curtail student speech. And the Supreme Court, when they talked about teacher speech, they were talking about teacher expression, the open exchange of ideas. Now, a teacher, whether it's at this academy or another university, can't take their position of authority and compel or demand participation in or penalizing someone who doesn't share their faith. But if a student, a cadet, were to ask a teacher in a classroom, what is your particular view of this from your faith perspective, I don't think there should be the muzzle of a censor put on their particular speech. The idea being that we could protect this idea of robust speech, robust freedoms for both the student and the teacher, and draw boundaries. Now, I'm sure what we're going to get into over the next period of time is where do you draw those boundaries? And look, religion cases are line drawing. Sometimes I've drawn it on the right side of the line and the courts agreed, and sometimes I've drawn it on a line and the court did not agree. But it is line drawing. And what we need to do in the context of this, and I hope we do have, and I believe we will have a constructive dialogue, so that we can see where you do draw the lines, how you draw those lines, and how you can protect our fundamental freedom of speech, which includes religious speech, in the context of an academy as prestigious as this. Thank you very much.
If you signed on and called previously back in the last summer in 2006 to support our military chaplains, we appreciate it. But we need to hear from you again because now it's going to take this executive order. It's that important. So here's the number, 877-989-2255 to support the executive order from President Bush to support our military chaplains. 877-989-2255. And we really want you to help us to make sure these chaplains can pray according to the dictates of their conscience, according to the dictates of their faith commitment, without a censorship. So again, 877-989-2255 or aclj.org for updated information.
Talking about freedom. I'm talking about freedom.
Now more than ever, our men and women who serve in the military deserve our gratitude, our respect, and our prayers. And those who serve in the military should be able to turn to their chaplains for prayer. But there's a problem. The freedom of military chaplains to pray according to their faith is now threatened. It's a troubling development, one that must be met head-on. That's why the American Center for Law and Justice is backing an effort spearheaded by North Carolina Congressman Walter Jones to urge President Bush to direct Defense Secretary Gates to issue new regulations to protect the constitutional right of military chaplains to pray according to their faith. That means ensuring chaplains can pray in the name of Jesus. Stand with the ACLJ and sign on today to the Petition to Protect Military Prayer. Send an important message to President Bush. Sign the petition now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. The Petition to Protect Military Prayer. You can also add your name online at aclj.org. It's one of the most important websites on the internet. By logging onto the website at the American Center for Law and Justice, you get the very latest news and analysis on the issues that matter most to you and your family. And you get help. At aclj.org, there's a virtual library of legal resource materials, making it easy for you to get the answers you need to protect your religious and constitutional freedoms, especially when it comes to school issues. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
I cannot tell you how many hundreds of cases every year, literally hundreds, probably thousands, are resolved without litigation, without lawyers getting involved. When you simply walk in, you take the information down from ACLJ.org, you walk into your school building and say, wait a minute, here's what the law is, this is what, and these are the guys that litigate the case at the Supreme Court of the United States. It makes a huge impact.
Make the ACLJ website part of your daily internet experience. Log on today at ACLJ.org, the internet home of the American Center for Law and Justice. ACLJ.org.
This is my right, a right given by God, to live a free life, to live in freedom.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast. This week we've been playing for you an important debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein. It was at the U.S. Air Force Academy just a couple months ago. We talked a lot about this debate over the past few months, and we've had Michael Weinstein on the program to discuss his organization, Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which takes an opposing view to the American Center for Law and Justice on these issues. It's an important debate. We've broken it down for you, so if you've missed a day, just go to aclj.org. You can check out the debate online. Let's go back and start listening to the debate again.
Mr. Weinstein, 5 minutes.
You know, I didn't expect to like Jay. I think he looks a lot like Dustin Hoffman. And, you know, I know he's a Messianic Jew, but my Judar went off, and he's a good Jewish boy. I could tell the moment I met him. My response is, and I can see the minutes are typing down, coming down here, so I wish we had more time. My response to my Jewish brother, Jay, is, sir, we're not in high school anymore. This is the U.S. Air Force Academy. It's not Baylor. It's not Notre Dame. And I may be wrong, I don't believe you've ever served in the U.S. Armed Forces. I don't see that pejoratively or either pedantically. It's very different in your first 30 seconds when you come off the bus here at the Air Force Academy. It's very, very different. This is not a civilian organization. It's not Lincoln High School. And you know what? In our military, many of our constitutional rights are intentionally and necessarily truncated and taken away so that we can preserve the higher concept of good order and discipline, to create a lethal military to protect the full panoply of constitutional rights for the rest of us. We had a situation with Goldman versus Weidberg, where there was a Jewish gentleman who wanted to wear a yarmulke, and that was found to be prejudicial to good order and discipline. Later on, Congress did something with it, but it's still good law. You can't wear that yarmulke. It messes up good order and discipline. 2003, Mellon versus Bunting, Virginia Military Institute. The ancient, suppertime secular prayer given to the cadets was found by the Fourth Circuit, not the crazy Ninth Circuit, the liberal Ninth Circuit in California, where I'm a lawyer. I'm also a lawyer in Washington, D.C. And here's their words, my brother Jay. Being at a military academy, it's an adversarial, communal, ritualistic environment. We believe that even a secular prayer from the, like what would be the staff tower in Mitchell Hall, the dining facility, exacts an unconstitutional toll upon among those who are not believers. Toto, we're not in high school anymore. One other thing I'd like to mention is that we have 29.5 million Americans that profess no faith whatsoever. Atheists, agnostics, whatever you want to say, they should enjoy the full rights that we have. But you know something? In 1947, Curtis E. LeMay, The famous legendary general founded this, one of the leading fathers of the Air Force, of course, the legendary commander of the Strategic Air Command, created something called the Little Blue Book. How many people out there know the Little Blue Book of core values? That's embarrassing that you don't know that. That's the core, not peripheral, values of the U.S. Air Force. In 1947, it said what we're all about. This is what we're all about. 50 years later in 1997, because airplanes were falling out of the skies, there was contractor ethical issues, the Air Force was coming to pieces, they amended the core values. Not just integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. This was a core value. Here's what it says, and it still says it. Religion is a matter of individual conscience. Military professionals, including chaplains, and especially commanders, must never take it upon themselves to try to coercively influence or change the religious views of subordinates. What do you do when you have a three-star general that's ordering his staff to put together a PowerPoint presentation showing the direct parallel between the Book of Revelations and all of our movements in the AOR, for you civilians, Area of Responsibility, Iraq and Afghanistan? What do you do when you have a four-star general who favors the distribution of a pamphlet in his commander's building, his palace, advertising an off-base at a mega-evangelical church class entitled, quote, Jesus versus Muhammad, an examination of the life of both prophets and why Jesus is superior to all? Why was the most popular joke here at the Air Force Academy in 2004, why did Jews make the best magicians? Anyone know? Show of hands? We make the best magicians, apparently, because we have the magical ability to walk into a red brick building and come out the smokestacks in a puff of smoke. The matriarch of my family passed away in Albuquerque in 1991. She was very old. She said to me, Mikey, don't give up this fight. She was a Holocaust survivor. Spielberg took her testimony for 4 hours. Don't give up the fight. And I said, I won't, Aunt Great Aunt Herta. But I asked her a question. I asked her one simple question. Why were you so mad at the family when we took your driver's license away? She was 88 and we took it away. And she was really, seriously freaking pissed. We knew she only had a few days to live. She got up off her elbows, and I can't affect her Berlin, her German accent. She pointed at me, 91 years old, 6 days away from death. And she said, because when you're a Jew, you always have to be ready to get away. 91 years old. We're not getting away. This is our country. We have a beautiful constitution that represents everything that we're about. It doesn't matter. We beat Tojo, Hitler, and Mussolini in 44 months without becoming Tojo, Mussolini, and Hitler. We don't have to become the Christian Taliban to win this one. Thank you.
Some of these regulations were actually rolled back, and that was a good start. We were glad with some of the rollback on this, but folks, it is a major issue now because with the change of Congress, it's going to take a presidential executive order to protect our military chaplains. And I want to tell you, we are working on it and are working on it as we speak. I've got research going on executive orders. We're going to ask the president for a specific executive order. Let me ask you this question. Do you think the president of the United States should sign an executive order authorizing our military chaplains to pray according to the dictates of their conscience, according to their faith commitment, which means they would pray in Jesus' name if they wanted to? The rabbi would utilize Hebrew. Do you think they should have that right? Should we protect our military chaplains that way? We need to hear from you on this. 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org for updated information.
Mr. Sekulow, 5 minutes.
Here's the fundamental difference. Nice job. I think the Jewish military personnel should have been able to wear the yarmulke. I do. I think if a Orthodox member of the Jewish faith was serving in our armed forces, that there better be a really compelling governmental interest to say he can't wear a yarmulke. Now, if you were a Navy SEAL, yarmulke could not be worn. I understand that. And you're right, I didn't serve in the military. I did not. I actually had a commission for the Navy JAG. But the 6 months at sea, it convinced me to instead serve another branch of our government, not very popular, but a branch on the left, that was the United States Treasury Office. And I remember back in those early days when I was practicing law representing the United States that you always held in high esteem that your client was the United States. I mean, I'll never forget when the first time I walked in the court and the judge said, are the parties ready, counsel ready? Yes, the United States is ready. I'm the grandson of an immigrant. My grandfather came to the United States from Russia in 1914 because you couldn't be a Jew in Russia anymore. So I understand what you're saying. He came to the United States, and in a generation, his grandson was arguing cases at the Supreme Court of the United States. And I thought about this the last time I was up, very recently at the Supreme Court arguing a case, and they call your name. The Chief Justice calls your name and says, Mr. Sekulow will now hear from you. And I was thinking about this. My grandfather didn't live long enough to see me in college, let alone practicing law. But they say that. They say, Mr. Sekulow will now hear from you. And I thought about this. Here I am, the grandson of Shmulek Sekulow, a fruit peddler in Brooklyn, arguing cases at the Supreme Court of the United States. Only in America. So I cherish the Constitution. I believe there are times, though, when the courts get it wrong. And one of those times when they get it wrong, in my view, was the case involving, you brought it up, the case involving the yarmulke and the Jewish member of the military. Because, for instance, I don't know if the policy would have applied here at the academy, but if a student was wearing a yarmulke here, I don't think that would necessarily. Now, I'm not a military man, but I can't imagine that that's going to affect good order. Because part of good order has to be that we understand our differences and we can communicate those differences and we can respect enough differences to say, you know what, I don't agree with this particular statement. But even though I don't agree with it, a religious statement at that, there are times when you just say, okay, that's part of being an American. I could, for instance, person that argued a case recently in the Supreme Court of the United States, Mike Newdow. Mike represented his family trying to get the Pledge of Allegiance phrase under God declared unconstitutional. What a lot of people don't know is that Mike Newdow and I are friends. We disagree on the issue. I never make it personal. But the Supreme Court of the United States in 1789 has started each session with the same statements, God save the United States and this honorable court, and Mike was going to file an objection. It would have been the first time in the history of the court that it was never argued, that it would never have been said. I suggested to him that he not do that. That he's going to be one of the few lawyers in America that get to argue a case before the Supreme Court of the United States, which is a privilege. That sometimes you respect a tradition you disagree with.
Join with us. We're asking the president to issue an executive order. That's what it's going to take here to get it done. Getting it through Congress, through the legislative channel, just with the change in Congress, just isn't going to happen. 877-989-2255. And we really want you to help us to make sure these chaplains can pray according to the dictates of their conscience, according to the dictates of their faith commitment, without a censorship. So again, 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org for updated information.
When you choose Regent University's undergraduate program, you're choosing to change your life.
I chose Regent University because
the quality of education that you receive,
the Christian perspective,
and then I saw the level of excellence.
Just the level at which the professors expect you to perform at is such a high level.
The professors are so amazing.
The care of the instructors,
totally dedicated,
and they go out of their way to make sure that they can help you.
They embrace you as though you're one of their children.
Everyone becomes just a big family,
and they want to catapult you into your destiny.
I knew that I was definitely home.
You're not just going to a school, but you're gaining a family that operates with the spirit of excellence.
I rate it from 1 to 10, a solid 10, absolutely.
I definitely feel like I received a top-notch education.
The undergrad program opened up doors for me.
I'll have a bright future because of the education that I received at Regent University.
Every aspect of your education is just amazing and just such a blessing.
Learn more at regentundergrad.com. You can also call toll-free 1-800-374-4504. That's 1-800-374-4504. Regent Undergrad. Enroll today. Now more than ever, our men and women who serve in the military deserve our gratitude, our respect, and our prayers. And those who serve in the military should be able to turn to their chaplains for prayer. But there's a problem. The freedom of military chaplains to pray according to their faith is now threatened. It's a troubling development, one that must be met head-on. That's why the American Center for Law and Justice is backing an effort spearheaded by North Carolina Congressman Walter Jones to urge President Bush to direct Defense Secretary Gates to issue new regulations to protect the constitutional right of military chaplains to pray according to their faith. That means ensuring chaplains can pray in the name of Jesus. Stand with the ACLJ and sign on today to the Petition to Protect Military Prayer. Send an important message to President Bush. Sign the petition now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. The Petition to Protect Military Prayer. You can also add your name online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. You've been listening to an important debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the U.S. Air Force Academy. We've broken it up into segments for you, and it's an important debate. This is about the role of religion in our military schools. This was done at the U.S. Air Force Academy.
The Supreme Court of the United States in 1789 has started each session with the same statements, God save the United States and this honorable court, and Mike was going to file an objection. It would have been the first time in the history of the court that it was never argued, that it would never have been said. I suggested to him that he not do that, that he's going to be one of the few lawyers in America that get to argue a case before the Supreme Court of the United States, which is a privilege, that sometimes you respect a tradition you disagree with. For Mike Newdow, he didn't believe God save the United States or the court. But for some of us, it's a statement that shows what's called ceremonial deism. And you know, my view is, and look, in my circles, it's not a popular word. People say it trivializes religion. I don't think so. I think we are, from our standpoint of what Justice Douglas said is right. I mean, we are, with very various religious beliefs and some with no religious beliefs whatsoever, we are this religious people. We're a tapestry of religion. It doesn't mean we all have faith. Some have no faith whatsoever. This is America. You get to do it. But part of the traditions we understand is things like religious speech in the marketplace, religious speech even in the enclave of the military. Now, it does not mean, and I want to make it very clear, that a general or anybody else should say to anyone else under them, if you don't do this, there's a consequence for not following my order. You better be at chapel on Sunday at such and such a time. You don't get to do that, because for the same reason I said this is America. You don't get to do that. We don't have a religious oath test for a reason, and I think that's a good thing. We don't have a religious oath requirement. But I don't think that we can say with ease that although we have no religious oath requirement in the Constitution, that our framework of understanding is immune from the role of religion in American public life, including within the context of the military. It was interesting to me, and I know there are people that disagree with this tragedy that we had in my state of Virginia, Commonwealth. You should never call it a state. Don't report me on that. That's a big thing with Virginia. It's a Commonwealth. That everybody that spoke invoked God, or a reference to God, in times of tragedy. I think the First Amendment works both ways. It doesn't just have to be in times of tragedy. There's enough room in the Constitution to respect differences, to protect the religious speech and religious speakers. Thanks.
The irony of all of this is, in these military situations, you want prayer to be there, and you want these chaplains to pray according to their faith commitment, to the dictates of their conscience. That's why you have a variety of different denominations represented in the chaplaincy corps. But that's not what's going on right now. But we've got a chance to change this, but it's going to take your voice to be heard. We've got to get an executive order from President Bush, 877-989-2255. Let me urge you to call this number, add your name to our petition urging President Bush to support our military chaplains with an executive order protecting prayer of our chaplains. 877-989-2255. If they want to pray in Jesus' name, they certainly should have the right to do that. Also, information at ACLJ.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the question and answer phase of our evening. If you have a question, please go to one of the two microphones in the aisles. We will alternate questions from the two microphones. You may address your question to one or both speakers. Please keep your question short and to the point. And our two speakers will be at their podiums.
Hello. First of all, I'd like to thank both of y'all for coming out here this evening. It's been great hearing both of your opinions. I just had a question. If you could elaborate on exactly where you think that line is between free speech and coercion regarding religious expression. Obviously, you know, passing out pamphlets in the Pentagon about Jesus versus Muhammad is a little over the line. I think we can all agree on that. But where exactly, for example, wearing the yarmulke, is that, Mr. Weinstein, do you think that is legal or not, or should be legal or not? I mean, should military members leave their religions completely at the door of their installations, or should military members be allowed to express their religious opinions but not coerce?
You know, this isn't my first rodeo. I do a lot of speaking around the country, and I get asked this question a lot. I'm not going to be the arbiter. I mean, I get excited about some things. The yarmulke thing to me is something that, no, I don't believe that Jewish personnel should be wearing yarmulkes. That's my personal belief. What I personally believe doesn't necessarily really matter, but I can tell you that When my friend Jay was talking about, you know, obviously he would be against an officer saying, you will do this or will do that. We have so many cases like that, I can't believe it. We have so many complainants that are Roman Catholics, so many that are Protestants. But most of the time, it's a tacit nuance. Because in the military, if your commander comes by and says, listen, Beth and I are having a Bible study at the house at Wednesday, most of the, you know, the flights coming by, don't feel like you need to come. But, you know, if you want to come and get to know the Lord a little bit, that would be great. No. Wrong. Bad. Can't do that. Can't do that. So when you talk about drawing the line, you know, I'm not a federal judge, but we have so many things that are so unbelievably odious that are over the line that, you know, I'd like to try to, you know, it'll take 5 years to get back to figuring out where a line is. But ultimately, no, I would not be in favor of people wearing religious apparel. Unit cohesion, good order and discipline is so critical in the military that sexual intercourse with someone other than your spouse, adultery, is still routinely punished as a felony in the military. I've tried and defended those cases. In the military, if your military superior tells you to go to the base dentist at 4 p.m. and you don't go, it's a felony. So I would not be in favor of that. And again, I'll leave to the 8 million other lawyers that are out there as to where the line will be drawn. But I can tell you we don't have to worry about some of these things. And even you mentioned, I think that was a cadet who asked the question about, well, obviously we'd all be against, you know, a general doing that. Well, we're not all against it. That's the problem.
I want to do a quick comment on that because you brought up the situation with the faculty saying to a cadet, hey, we're having a Bible study at our house. You know, obviously, from my perspective, I don't see that as a constitutional crisis, so long as there is not some kind of compelled coercion or penalty if you don't attend. And I would hope that in an academy such as this, that if a... Look, I teach law school, and I tell my students I'm having an event at my house, and believe me, plenty of them don't come. I don't penalize them for it. Sometimes I wouldn't come. I mean, it's just kind of, that's the way it is. So I do understand the sensitive lines that have to be drawn, but I want to say something about the yarmulke, because obviously, Mike, you and I disagree on the yarmulke. I want to preface this by saying I did not serve in the military, so I have to preface that.
That's my best argument against you.
But. Okay. But I don't I really don't understand that if you had a formation of cadets that were here today and lined up, and everybody was seated, and there was an Orthodox Jewish student, and they're compelled to wear a yarmulke, that he has to choose not to serve his country, or she chooses not to serve her country if she has to wear a head cover. I think there needs to be room for that. Now, I understand if you're out on a battlefield and you're a spy for the for our side and you're trying to get behind enemy lines, and obviously you need to look like the enemy. But I don't think it can be that general and that overbroad. I think we need to have room where we can to accommodate those. That's the yarmulke. You want to make sure these chaplains are protected legally. It is critical that you go to your phones and join our petition to get this executive order in place from the president. 877-989-2255 or aclj.org. It's going to take an executive order to do it. We need your help on this. I'm urgently calling for your participation, and we really want you to help us to make sure these chaplains can pray according to the dictates of their conscience, according to the dictates of their faith commitment, without censorship. So again, 877-989-2255. 255 or ACLJ.org for updated information.
You've been listening to an important debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the U.S. Air Force Academy. We've broken it up into segments for you, and it's an important debate. This is about the role of religion in our military schools. Folks, tomorrow on the broadcast, you'll hear more from the debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the U.S. Air Force Academy. We thank you for listening today.